BNR Nieuwsradio. De Perestrooikast. Geert-Jan en Floris.
Welkom bij BNR Perestrooikast, aflevering 141 van de enige podcast van Nederland die volledig oog voor het oosten heeft en geeft. En de vijfde aflevering van onze zomerserie.
6 weken lang hebben wij een bijzonder interview met een Perestrooikast. Met 1 rode draad, de relatie tussen oost en west.
En voor onze 5e Perestrooikast reisde de Perestrooikast af naar Berlijn. Waar Floris en ik een ontmoeting hadden met schrijver Sascha Marianne Salzman.
Eastern Europe is such a complex, multi-diverse area that it's not easy to understand. You need to have a lot of history lessons which we didn't have in school.
Met vandaag een extra focus op de rol van Duitsland in Europa. Het land waar Sascha Salzman, een non-binaire schrijver met Russisch, Jiddisch, Oekraïense wortels, sinds het 10e levensjaar woont.
Ja, Duitsland, het land dat nu met heel veel moeite doorheeft dat Oekraïne niet hetzelfde is als Rusland. En nu ook doorheeft dat Oostpolitiek niet langer werkt.
What happened is Germany used the East to get rich, but taught the people to look west. To look better.
Jarenlang waarschuwden Warschau, Riga en Vilnius, de westerse hoofdsteden, voor de Russische beer. Maar Parijs, Den Haag en zeker ook Berlijn keken naar de economische voordelen van zaken doen met Rusland. En luisterden niet naar het gegrom en de noodkreten.
En laten we eerlijk zijn. Het is eigenlijk voor ons in het Westen een wake-up call in slow motion geworden. Want signalen waren er de afgelopen jaren voor ons allemaal eigenlijk genoeg.
Berlijn, de stad waar Oost en West samenkomt en voelbaar is. Een betere plek om na te denken over de kloof tussen Oost en West is er misschien niet, mijn waarde Floris.
Tijd om naar de Duitse hoofdstad te schakelen. Naar onszelf in gesprek met Sascha Salzman.
En met Floris, die onze traditionele openingsvraag stelt, uiteraard in het Engels.
Let's go back to the 21st of February. Mm-hmm. Did you see this full-scale Russian invasion in Ukraine coming?
Oh, that's a tricky question because the answer is going through a metamorphosis, right? Everybody was back then, no, nothing will happen. And now they're like, I knew it. Like, mm-hmm. I came across about that quite a lot. And I think there is something very cynical about saying I knew it. I remember in January having a talk with my best friend saying, you know, in March, the pandemic will be over and the war gonna start. But I made a joke. And mm-hmm. I'm known as, you know, like funny, not funny, pessimist in our kind of like crew. So I was afraid of it. And I knew that Russia is able to do that. And I was not surprised. I was shocked and disgusted. Mm-hmm. But I didn't know that it will happen. And I have friends from Kiev who actually now are refugees who were in Berlin in February and went back on the 20th. Mm-hmm. Those people were the ones we picked up from Poland with a car on the 1st of March.
Voordat je meer hoort van Sascha Salzman over hoe de schrijver de relatie tussen Oost- en West-Europa beziet vanuit Berlijn, is misschien toch goed om een iets uitgebreidere introductie van onze gast te geven, Floris?
Zeker, maar eerst even ons visitekaartje. Want mocht je het inmiddels nog niet weten, alles ten oosten van de rivier de Elbe kan de komende weken, maanden, jaren in deze podcast worden besproken. En dat blijkt maar weer eens met ons gesprek vanuit Berlijn.
We hebben zelfs de Elbe moeten oversteken daarvoor.
Zeker.
Fysiek aanwezig in het oosten. En wat leuk is dat we heel sociaal en democratisch zijn. En abonneer je op ons, zodat je geen aflevering hoeft te missen. BNR Perestrooikast, zoek ons op in je favoriete podcast-app.
Ik ben Floris Akkerman.
Ik ben Geert-Jan Haan.
En dit is BNR Perestrooikast, de zomereditie met Perestrooigast nummer 5. En dat is dus Sascha Marianne Salzman, schrijver van boeken, toneelstukken, essays. Op de Nederlandse markt is al verkrijgbaar Buiten Mezelf. En Salzmans tweede boek verschijnt op 28 september. Alles moet mooi zijn aan een mens. Waarin het ook gaat over 4 levens tijdens omwentelingen. Van Perestroika tot aan het Europa en Duitsland van nu.
Nou, de voorouders van Salzman komen uit Oekraïne. Zelf is geboren in Rusland. En ze is non-binair. Dus als ik zeg ze is, dan moet ik dus eigenlijk zeggen hen is of hun is. Excuus voor de verwarring daarbij af en toe. Maar we proberen Salzman daarin te respecteren natuurlijk.
Zeker. Zelf noemt Sascha Salzman zich een homo sovjeticus. Gevormd door de verdwenen Sovjet-Unie. Waar hun werd geboren in 1985 in Volgograd. Met de familie waarvan de wortels in Rusland en Oekraïne liggen.
We pakken hem nu op bij het essay van Salzman.
De Russen stonden nog bij Kiev toen Trouw het essay De Grote Honger en het Lange Verzwijgen van Sascha Salzman publiceerde over het vergeten Oekraïne. Dat was eerder verschenen in de Zwitserse Neue Zürcher Zeitung. En dit essay komt voort uit hun boek Menschen muss alles herrlich sein, waarvan dus de Nederlandse vertaling Alles moet mooi zijn aan een mens eind september uitkomt.
Nou, opvallend aan dat essay, Salzman schreef het al voor de oorlog.
Well, you know, all the media was full since December about what's happening on the border to Ukraine. It was not only in my head, it was all over the place that Russia is gathering hundreds, thousands of soldiers. And at one point, I couldn't think about anything else, to be honest. So like this, you know, the tensions reached me personally very much earlier. And when the Neue Zürcher Zeitung approached me, they were just like, hey, you have a carte blanche for an essay. I said, like, there's only one thing I can think of. Let me write about Ukraine. And there was a very tragic dynamic in my conversations with the editor of this piece, because when we started, for him it was just a historian, you know, like essay, and suddenly it became very much about what's going on right now. And the essay appeared 2 days after the war started to spread west.
En in dat essay haalt Salzman regelmatig de markante Oekraïense schrijfster Oksana Zabushko aan. Zabushko heeft het over hoe Oekraïne langzaam is opgehouden met bestaan voor de buitenwereld.
She's finding words and naming situations we kind of like would love not to see and not to hear. And it's very, very shaming for all of us, and I'm including myself here, to know so little about this great country. And not great because I'm a patriot, I'm the opposite of that. I don't believe in nations. But because so many great things come from Ukraine, and we constantly think that they come from Russia. You know, like Malevich, I don't know, stuff like that. I remember I tried to transfer money to Zaporozhye, which is the east of Ukraine, and, you know, the bank account person who is supposed to know geography said, where in Russia is it? So I think that's the feeling Sabushko is trying to put in her writing, and not only in the novel you mentioned, but basically in everything she writes. She said, we were doing so well since the perestroika, since 91, basically. We were doing everything to be part of the European Union. We, our improvement, you know, like, is basically undiscussably impressive for the situation. You know, like, they've been completely destroyed by the Soviet state, and they still managed to do all these improvements. And in the end, nobody just cared. It was, I think that the symbolic of that is even heavier than the facts, because sometimes, you know, you're not supported financially by you, or you, like, you don't get the support you need, but you have the emotional support, or you feel seen. And so you can really improve and you can really grow. No matter what Ukraine did since the perestroika, we didn't look in that direction. If we did, it was, you know, like, maybe for Eurovision Song Contest and saying, yeah, they're freaky, they're crazy, that's fun. But just not acknowledging hundreds of years of culture that also not only impressed, but, like, you know, inspired all of us in Europe. It's not only the East. Malevich is not only the East, right?
But is there a connection between this war and this lack of interest? Like, it's...
Well, I think that, talking from a German perspective here, and I think that's important because I think that the German state has a particular role in this. And I think that because one maybe of the most important historians of our times on that topic, Timothy Snyder, who lived in Ukraine and who wrote most important historian books about Holodomor till today, till the situation in Ukraine today. He analyzed how Germany basically fed Vladimir Putin, how Germany helped to make this dictator possible. And I don't want to, you know, like, take the whole blame for this dictator, and I also don't want to say that, you know, the Russian population doesn't have, like, the major part in that. But we should not forget that the wealth of Germany is basically based on making this dictator great.
We gaan naar de kaart van Europa. Salzman beschrijft die kaart op een manier die voor een aantal mensen, of misschien wel veel mensen in Nederland, best herkenbaar is.
Ja, misschien kun je dat deel uit Dagblad Trouw even voorlezen.
Ja, er staat een passage in, ik citeer. Voor de meeste van ons in het Westen houdt de emotionele landkaart krap achter de Oekermark op. bij de Poolse grens. Men schudt bezorgd het hoofd over de verkiezingsuitslagen in Oost-Duitsland en de mensenrechten situatie in EU-lidstaat Polen. En dan begint Rusland al. Tenminste volgens onze emotionele kennis, stelt Salzman.
Well, the Iron Wall is still there in our heads, and I don't think it was ever really destroyed. There were always people who were interested in the east of Europe because it was exotic and different. But I think that the majority of people learned, were trained to look west. Because that's where the money is, and that's where, I don't know, Cardi B comes from.
Cardi B?
Yeah, well, you know, like everything that the West is standing for is in the States, even if, you know, like even if you think of, you know, Western culture, people think of maybe something French and maybe something from Hollywood. And I think, I mean, they're not to blame. It's not that I'm saying it's a mistake. I think it's made also in history lessons in schools. It's mm-hmm. made by our media. It's constructed by a Eurovision Song Contest and all the contests which are telling something about the soul of, I don't know, countries or let's say continents. And I think that the West of Europe feels so much more connected to the States. That's why I'm mentioning Cardi B. And I'm a big fan. It's not about Cardi. but I'm just thinking that everybody would prefer to watch a Cardi B video rather than watch something from Ukraine. And it's also, of course, the language. It's, of course, you know, the writing is different, the thinking is different. But I lived in Istanbul for 4 years. And Istanbul felt so much closer to Berlin than Kiev or Lviv. And I think that is very much shaped in us. That is made. That is not natural interest. Maybe there is no such thing as natural interest. People are taught to like something or to look a certain way. And I was just not aware that people in Germany, they know so little about the part of the world where I come from. And it's interesting because I lived here for so many years and I thought I know that, you know, there is like this idea of the crazy Eastern European. But the heaviness and the real danger of this thinking just hit me in March, where I understood that the German politicians don't know enough to deal with the situation, that they let Gerhard Schröder do his thing with Vladimir Putin just because they didn't care about the Soviet people, the post-Soviet people. And also because we're in Germany, we should not forget that there was like a very important ideology of people like me being not equally to, you know, to of course the Alia, the Western European people, the European people, and I think that kind of stayed in Europe, that people from the East were less valid. I feel that in Germany. I feel that when I open, you know, big time media, I'm not talking about social media. If you go on Tagesschau.de, which is, you know, like the main news site, and you see these reports about people from the East and they go into, you know, like some kind of like an alcohol kind of shop and talk to a drunk person and pretend that this is representing, you know, like an Eastern culture. There's still a representation of us which feels like it fed by certain prejudices from very dark times of this country and this continent.
Yeah. Still, I think this is kind of a surprise for Dutch listeners, because from our perspective, Germany is Mitteleuropa. Berlin is the place where once East and West was divided, but also where they met again 30 years ago. And we heard a lot about Ostpolitik, so Germany was always in touch with the East. So what went wrong?
Yeah, the Ostpolitik is more focused on Russia, or
that's what we know, or what we think. But is it common knowledge?
You know what I think? I think what happened is Germany used the East to get rich, but taught the people to look west, to look better. The people in Germany, they don't know or didn't know till this year, that where their gas is coming from, although it was not a secret. They didn't know that Ukrainian blood is basically running through our heating systems. And not only since 2022, because how can you have, you know, the annexion of the Crimea, how can you have a war in Ukraine and still build these pipelines Germany were building? So that was, you know, the case quite for a few years. And the German population decided to look in other directions.
Okay.
And but now you see a big discussion about what Germany has to do.
Yeah,
with Russia, with Ukraine.
Yes, of course. But you know, like these discussions, they're not only theoretically or it's not an intellectual discussion, it's also an emotional discussion. And Germany and Germans are very connected to Russia and Russians. They don't understand that they're basically connected to Ukrainians too, because if they think of what they understand Russia is, they think of Soviet Union, and of course Ukrainian was part of that. Mm-hmm. But I think what I realized, and that was very interesting to me and surprising, they're not ready to say completely no. They say no to the war. I think that's out of question. But they don't say to Russia, because a lot of people really speak it out. They say, like, but we have such a history together. And then I would say, yeah, but you have a history with Soviet Union, and Ukrainian was part of this. What they learned, though, is that they have a history only with Russia. And that's propaganda. Started with Stalin and, you know, still not finished, obviously. The story is still ongoing.
Start with Stalin, and you mean the Second World War? This
yeah, I mean like Stalin, who destroyed Ukrainian culture to the extent that people didn't know till very, you know, like till the 90s that this thing existed. Ukrainians themselves could not speak their own language and, you know, like develop their culture. That worked for so many decades, and I think it's Stalin's victory over us that people still know so little, and people in the West, let's say Germany, still not connected to Ukraine, although if their argumentation is history, they should be more connected to Ukraine than to Russia.
Ik vind toch wel opvallend wat Salzman hier schetst, want je weet dat Oostpolitiek bestaat of bestaan heeft, en wat ik al zei, Duitsland is Midden-Europa, maar voor mij betekent dat ook dat het dan een scharnierpunt is tussen Oost en West, en met alle eerste, tweede, derde generatie, Russen, Oekraïners, Polen, alles wat daar woont, van de Balkan. Zou je toch denken dat met Berlijn als ultiem uithangbord, dat Duitsland snapt dat Oost-Europa niet zomaar Oostblok is? Je zou toch denken dat de afgelopen 30 jaar daar in ieder geval iets van bekend zou zijn geraakt. En Salzman zegt dus eigenlijk, Duitsland heeft het Oosten gebruikt om rijk te worden, maar zegt tegen de eigen mensen om naar het Westen te kijken.
Ja. Ook de ogen van de Joodse Salzman zijn door de oorlog in Oekraïne opengegaan. Want eigenlijk is ook de schrijver pas sinds kort bezig met hun Oekraïnse identiteit. Nog een stukje uit hun essay van Trouw. Niemand kon Oekraïne op een kaart aanwijzen. En ik vroeg me af, who gives a fuck about Ukraine in my family? Niemand bij ons had ooit gezegd, wij komen uit Oekraïne. Iedereen sprak Russisch en Jiddisch. Oekraïens bestond voor ons niet als taal.
En dan vragen we dus Salzman verderop in het gesprek, nu je dit zo opmerkt bij jezelf en nou ook West-Europa dus probeert te wennen aan het idee dat Oost-Europa geen Oostblok is, maar veel diverser is dan mensen dachten. Is dat dan misschien toch winst in een oorlog waarin je verder alleen maar verliezers kent natuurlijk? En overbrug je dus nu makkelijker bepaalde kloven tussen Oost en West?
It's true, but I think you're too optimistic.
Sorry.
I think that since the war in Ukraine started to spread west, we forgot about Belarus. Nobody gives a damn about Belarus. And I have friends from there who were facing jail and had to flee and realize now that nobody will ever care about them. And I think that's a dirty game that politics plays with us all the time. It's not only the fault of the media or people being lazy. It's not. It's just our attention is limited. And how much can you take? Really, how much can you take? But the fact is that everybody is so busy with Ukraine right now that it's totally enough for Eastern Ukraine, you know, Eastern Europe. Mm-hmm. That's their full with information. And I also like watching the refugee situation in Germany for quite a while. I was also very sad to see how the differences are made in Germany, not only by the state, which is of course the worst because they're making the laws to, you know, like make people work in this country or stay in this country, having apartments in this country, learning the language, but also by the people, how much they differently looked at people who came from Georgia. Then they look at people who come from Ukraine, then from Belarus, which they don't even understand that it's not Russia, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Eastern Europe is such a complex, multi-diverse area that it's not easy to understand. You need to have a lot of history lessons, which we didn't have in school.
Mm-hmm. Dat is dus hoe we momenteel naar elkaar kijken in Europa. Salzman ziet nog weinig aanknopingspunten tot verbetering, Geert-Jan. Maar om positief af te sluiten, het hoeft niet heel moeilijk te zijn om elkaar beter te begrijpen, zegt de schrijver. Want we verschillen minder van elkaar dan we denken.
I think actually there are less gaps than we think. In the end, it's one of our neighbor states. It's one of the countries we don't know enough about, but we don't know enough about a lot of countries on this continent. Mm-hmm. And it would be great not to think about them coming to us, but all of us coming together.
And it starts with knowledge and being interested in the other.
Reading, always reading. And music. Hey, Ukraine has most amazing music scene. If you're not into reading, you should listen to music.
Hier stopt het radiogedeelte van het gesprek met Sascha Salzman. In het podcastgedeelte praten we verder over hun schrijfwerk, over hun boeken. Zoektochten naar wat het betekent om Joods te zijn, of Oekraïens, of post-homo Sovjeticus.
For my second novel, I was like, wait a second, we have a war in Ukraine since 2014. Why is nobody talking about that? And so I started to interview a lot of women from east of Ukraine. All of them live in Germany, and none of them said, I'm Ukrainian or I'm from the east. They understood themselves as like, you know, post-Soviet people.
Ja, meer hierover dus in onze langere Perestroikast podcast te vinden in de BNR-app.
Rest ons nog de volgende gast aan te kondigen. Want op 24 augustus 2022 is het precies een half jaar na de volledige Russische invasie in Oekraïne. En dan hoor je een gesprek met niemand minder dan Nino Haratishvili.
Haratishvili is bekend van het achterleven voor Brilka, een van de meest briljante familiegeschiedenissen die de afgelopen jaren is beschreven.
Jij?
Is mijn bescheiden mening. Ze schreef ook De Kat en de Generaal. Ze is regelmatig genoemd in de Perestroikast en komt in november met een nieuw boek in het Nederlands dan, Het Schaarse Licht.
En ze schreef afgelopen maart, naar aanleiding van de Russische invasie in Oekraïne, een opiniestuk. De vakantie van het Westen is voorbij. Hoe vindt zij dat West-Europa nu kijkt naar Oost-Europa?
They think we should strike for like more respect and like better understanding for each other, and we should maybe overcome this arrogance. This is what I really don't like about the Western cultures.
Volgende week woensdag op de radio en online. Niets missen. Abonneer je dan nu op BNR Perestroikast. Ayeto.
Paka.
Ook Thomas van Zijl vind je in de BNR-app.
Je kunt live naar mij luisteren in Zaken doen. De BNR-app met breaking news, het laatste zakelijke nieuws. En je vindt er alle BNR-podcasts, bijvoorbeeld Het Nieuwe Geld.
Download nu de gratis BNR-app en blijf scherp.